you sense that you don't feel any of these competitions. Definitely, if he speaks, if a person speaks and he has these negative traits, it immediately picks up and you feel antagonistic towards it. That is nothing that turns you off. And the person that has chesed, like he said, the Rabbeinu Yonah said before, if he has chesed, so he doesn't have any of these, he definitely can't have any of the negative traits that have a good trait of chesed, right? So therefore, a person doesn't feel the competition, and definitely when you do chesed for the person, and when you work with the person, he senses that you're really out to his good, you see? So then he'll really be attached to you. And that is the trait that will help you relate to God when you've worked out your personality. That will truly help you relate to God. Now the question is, what is the trait that a person that has the trait of MS, what is there in that trait that attracts both God and people to this person? Rabbeinu Yonah is making a distinction between Seichel Tov, which is the path of truth, by saying that Hatziku es Hatzadik v'Ashiu es HaRasha. You convict the guilty and you make innocent the righteous, right? You show that they're really innocent, okay? So that is the truth, that's Seichel Tov. Says, but the other people, they're involved in other types of wisdom, which are lies, calls it lies, and they go to evil, okay? So the thing is that he's making that distinction. We have to understand what's the distinction. What is that distinction between Atziku es Hatzadik v'Ashiu es HaRasha and the other types of wisdom that he seems to be talking about? Seems to be the Rabbeinu Yonah is talking about, where he's talking about chachma, about wisdom, the other types of wisdom. He's talking about wisdom not in the framework of Atziku es Hatzadik v'Ashiu es HaRasha. If you don't have that, you could have mathematics and sciences. All these things are not are of no value. On the contrary, they could be even harmful, because you don't have the right framework in which to receive it and to analyze it and what to do with it. Okay? So therefore, he said that's what the Rabbeinu Yonah seems to be saying. The question is that the Rabbeinu Yonah says that the people that make the righteous innocent and he condemns the wicked, says then he has good sense or good understanding, seichel tov, good sense, okay, that people will accept. However, you got to say that the wicked won't accept it. Let's say, for instance, you go out and tell a person mutzer that something he doesn't want to hear. You tell him, look, you did the incorrect act. How many people want to hear that? How many people you think are going to be your friend if you tell them, you know, I think that you made an error in your action. I don't think you should do such a thing, or I don't think you should say such a thing. How many friends are you going to have? I mean, I don't think you're going to have with chesed, I understand. But with truth, with the trait of truth, what aspect of truth is he talking about that people will be drawn to you? Especially the example that he says, or maybe that's the whole thing, maybe that is the idea that you vindicate the righteous and you condemn the wicked. The Pasuk is saying that God and people will be attracted to Seichel Tov. Okay? Motza chein v'seichel tov. Motza means they will find or be attracted to these things. One is chein, that was chesed. The other is seichel tov. Now, one start on it, one say there's a difference between emes and seichel tov. Emes is like you tell the truth. Seichel tov may be something else other than that. That's a good approach. But we don't know exactly what that quality, what that trait is of seichel tov. In other words, if you say understanding, that it's only understanding or a good sense, I mean, that I can understand. People are attracted to good ideas. But we're saying in the aspect of condemning the wicked and vindicating the righteous, making innocent the righteous, showing that they're innocent and that they do good and they're special people, right? That's what he says. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. It's in that aspect. In that aspect, it seems to be that it wouldn't, that people wouldn't accept him. People wouldn't accept him, and they won't even notice that he's Seichelto. They wouldn't notice anything. They're just too angry to accept anything. What are they recognizing? What are they accepting in the person in Seichelto? We're going back to Chesed for a minute, and that is that the question is, again, how is it both God and man that a Chesed, that a person that has, that is a Baal Chesed, that his nature is to be a Chesed, that it's good for God and man? For God, it is good because that's humility. Chesed means I don't have any attachment to the self, all these psychological attachments to the self, and even more so I could do for others totally, objectively, you know what I mean? Objectively I could do for others. As much, and I'm interested in others, that's humility. So therefore you're close to God because of humility. By people I think there's two reasons. One is because there's no negative trait. There's no negative trait. Since there's no negative trait, they sense that so they're not upset with the negative trait. Because they don't feel a competition, they don't feel jealousy, they don't feel any anger, they don't feel you're looking down on them. People sense that. Once they sense that, so they feel comfortable. The other thing is when you do chesed, people are attached to you. People are attached.
Yes.
Okay. The question is that that if any time you do chesed, what is the pasuk telling me? Any time you do chesed, people are going to like you. The answer is there's two types of chesed. There's the chesed that comes from the psychological makeup of human. That person still has the other conflict. So even if you do chesed, many times you remove the chain, the grace that people feel towards you because they sense the negative. You understand? Let's say you do chesed and you make them feel that they owe you. You know what I mean? Or they sense that you do chesed in one way but you're competitive in another way. And they sense these things, so therefore it counteracts. Here a person is totally drawn. There's nothing that chases you away. There are people that will hate the chacham insofar as he's a chacham. You understand? That's something else. Insofar as he's a tzaddik, they can't tolerate him because he represents all that they feel guilty about. So there's certain people like that, but that's from another angle. But from the angle of the trait of chesed, people don't sense the negative from you, and they appreciate, and since they don't sense the negative, they can appreciate totally the chesed that you do for them. Okay, we're back to the question, what is Seicholto? That's one question. And the second question is, when he talks about Seicholto and the method and the path of truth, he says, Vatiku es atzadik vashiu es arasha. He vindicates the tzaddik and the righteous, and he condemns the wicked. Now the question is, what is that? The person that vindicates the righteous and condemns the wicked, what is that? What is that quality? In other words, what is the quality? What is the nature of the person that does that? He says here, the Rabbeinu Yonah says, through emes, through truth, you will find Seichel Tov. Now we don't know what Seichel Tov is. In the eyes of God and man. That's what you'll find. You'll find Sechel Tov in the eyes of God and man, right? He who goes in the path of truth, he vindicates the righteous and he condemns the wicked. Those are the maskilim, those are the thinkers in Sechel Tov. That's what he said. So therefore the Sechel Tov must be, his nature must be a person that vindicates the righteous and condemns the wicked. Question is, what is the nature of the person that does that, and where in Sechel Tov fits into all that? And then afterwards he says, and they don't grab on to the wicked, to the false, to the sheker, to the false, with their wisdom. So we want to know what is false, what is sheker, and what is emes. What is false and what is true. We want to know what is the difference between the two. There are two studies. There is one study of the true and the false, and then there's the good and evil. Two types of studies. The true and the false is math science. In other words, the sun warms us up. True. The sun gives us light. True. You wouldn't say right. You wouldn't say it's just. You wouldn't say it's evil. That's it. It's just true or false. But when a person acts, how a person acts, that's good and evil. Okay? So he's saying that when we talk about truth, truth means good and evil. Okay? Now the question is, where do you say, see, truth? What does good and evil have to do with truth? You see? What does that have to do with truth? It should have to do with good and evil. Truth is true means like true and false, if the sun gives us light, yeah, that's true. Or if the sun doesn't give us light, that would be false. You see? So the thing is, why does he keep talking about the trait of truth when he talks about good and evil? You see? In other words, when he talks about sheker, that lies, means that it's not the, in other words, he might be a scientist, but he doesn't have the good and evil. He doesn't have the ideas of good and evil. Now, I could say the guy is evil. If he doesn't have good and evil, so you don't know what good is, so he must be acting evil. I could say evil. Why do I say you're a lie? It's a lie. Why do I say it's truth if you have it? The term true and false does not belong here. If you notice that everybody has a system of good and evil. I mean, you join the mafia, there are certain things that you must live by, which they hold as good. If you don't obey them, they hold as evil. Right? They have a system of good and evil. Everybody has their own system of good and evil. That system of good and evil is basically awakened by your emotions, by your personality. Okay? By the different traits that a person has, that's his system of good and evil. We say that there is an objective system of good and evil. Once it becomes objective, then we could use the word true and false. We have a method of analyzing good and evil and making it objectively good and evil. So then we could say true or false. Then we could say he's a person of emes. He's honest. He lives according to a system of honesty. You see? And the question is, what is the criteria of a true system? That's the question that we have to ask. Yeah, we're talking about the system of good and evil, and we want to know how you come about, how you decide what is good and evil. What is the criteria for men? Since we're saying that it's based on truth, which means you could have a proof of which way to live, so what what is really good and evil. So then we must say that that there must be some system, okay? And so therefore, what is the criteria for that system? There is one thing for certain. Any system that has a contradiction in it cannot be the correct method. That's for sure. We could find contradictions in all the false systems. And when you find contradictions, then you know that system is not correct. Okay? So therefore, if you live a system and you find it's contradictory, or you're studying a system and you find it's contradictory, then you must say that is not the system. That much we do know. Question is there a method of getting the a more positive type of approach than just that? In other words, you must have a system that's all, that doesn't have any contradiction. Ben wants to say that also, if you have Torah, then since you accept God, then whatever God... See, there's two ways of seeing reality. One is through my five senses, I know reality. And two, if God tells me something, so but since God is the source of all reality, since I know God is the source of all reality, so anything that God says is true is reality. You see? So therefore I could know the true system by virtue of the Torah system. Therefore the Torah system becomes a reality. But without the Torah system, then the only method seems to be the method of questioning or cross-examination, that if there is any contradiction, then it is not true. That's all we do know. We're sure of what is not true, and then we only the possibilities that are left do we live by. Now the question is, what about, for instance, in Mishlei, it says the whole book of Mishlei is that you should make decisions based on consequences. Okay? So the thing is that you get certain consequences, so therefore you shouldn't live that life. Okay? But the thing is that the book of Mishlei is basically, in other words, let's say, for instance, according to Mishlei, you wouldn't smoke. Okay? You can't say it's unjust to smoke. You understand? It's unhealthy to smoke. That's true. It's unhealthy. That's science. But it has nothing to do with good and evil. You see? In other words, there are certain consequences of doing certain things. Now unless you could show that if you don't live the idea of justice, that you'll get consequences, I'm just not sure if that will work. The justice, what is just, that I shouldn't, let's say I could kill you and totally get away with it. See, if I smoke, there's no way of getting away with it. Let's say I could kill you and get away with it. Totally get away, there's no question that I'm going to get caught at all. Now, and it's good for me, it'll be a good thing. Okay? Now the question is that there's no consequences. It's only a question of justice. You see? It's only a question of justice. Justice for right and wrong, good and evil, you see, that is only by proving that it's a contradiction. Inconsistent. The question is clarification on consequences. Consequences only tells you that you will suffer certain things if you do certain acts. That is a practical thing. It has nothing to do with good and evil. Just a practical way of making decisions in life to evaluate the consequences. Let's say I could do something evil, there'll be no consequence. There'll be no consequence. You see? So then according to that, I should be able to do it. You see? That's why I say that there is a consequence once that is your philosophy. Once you prove that something is just, by removing all the contradictory ones, contradictory possibilities. So then you must live by that philosophy. Well, not there'll be consequences, because then you're not living in reality. Not living in reality is the consequence, but that's only if you prove that it's just. But from consequences, I can't prove that a thing is just, because from consequences, I might not. In my mind, if it's not unjust, and I don't see any consequences, so then I have the right to do it. There's nothing wrong in doing it. If I don't see it unjust, and I don't see it, and I don't see any consequences, so then I would have the right to do it. According to my evaluation, I should do it. So therefore, you see that justice, what is just, first must be defined before you could define what the consequences is, what the consequences are. You see? So therefore, the only two ways of knowing justice, or good and evil, is through contradictions and removing the false ones. Well, if you have Torah, then by virtue that God is the source of all reality, that makes it true. Now the question is, what does this have to do with the Seichel Tov in the eyes of God and man? And also, what is the life of the person that lives the life of Sheker? Okay? And I think that will explain first. In other words, a person can be a scientist. Can be a scientist. But that doesn't mean he's just. It's different. A person can be a scientist, and he's not just. And the Torah holds that the framework in which a person operates, it must be the framework of justice. That must be part of a search for truth. See? That's what I'm saying. The thing is that the person that lives the life, that he's a scientist, but he doesn't have a system of justice, so then he is in contradiction. He's in contradiction. Why? A scientist is the person that lives by the mind and lives by truth. Now he's living by an inconsistent or contradictory system. So that in itself is not being scientific. You see? So therefore the scientist in a certain area is not scientific. And once you're not scientific in one area, it will affect the way you think in other areas. You see? And that is not a life of truth. We're talking about a personality of truth. He doesn't have the personality of truth. If you live an inconsistent life, you don't live you're not living a consistent life. That's truth. You must be consistent. So therefore, if he lives a scientific life, and he doesn't live the life of good and evil, and he doesn't investigate that, so then, or even if he investigates it, but he's inconsistent in his philosophy, so then he is not living the life of truth. His personality is not the life of truth. Okay? So therefore, that is totally not acceptable. Okay? Therefore, it's a false life. Not only an unjust life, but it's a false life. A person that lives this lifestyle must live a life of justice. Okay? Even though on the short run it's against his benefit. Okay? Like, for instance, sometimes it might be beneficial to talk Lashon Hara against somebody that's talking Lashon Hara about you to defend yourself. You know what I mean? There's certain times, there's certain things that seem to be good, but people could do to you, and not only that, if they really understand a just person, they know that he won't take vengeance. He can't take vengeance. He has to operate in a totally just manner. And sometimes it seems to be not to his advantage. Superficially, it seems to be not to his advantage. You see? So therefore, there's one thing that everybody recognizes in its body. They do recognize it. I've seen cases. Okay? I've heard of cases. More than from one person, from two people, I've heard cases. that these people really keep justice, and they recognize that other people recognize that, and they took advantage, and they could get things from them even though they're being unjust. You see, they recognize that. So the thing is that they recognize a certain trust that they could trust. There was one time an evil person. I mean, I really think the guy was evil. And he told one of these people that I hold is really a just person, told him a secret. And he knew he could trust him. He knew that the guy would never tell the secret. You see? They just know that there's a certain person that is totally trustworthy. You see? Definitely, you can see where that trait is accepted by God. I mean, the whole personality of a man of justice. You understand? But Seichel Tov is accepted by the human, by other people, because they recognize that this is the type of person, that reached this level, they recognize that he could be trusted. The question is, how do we fit in Atzigo as a Tzadik Hashiu as a Rasha? The answer is that a person that always vindicates the righteous and condemns the wicked is a person that his lifestyle, his personality, is that he must live the life of truth, and he can't go contradictory to the truth, even though on the immediate level it looks like he'll really get terrible consequences because of his honesty. Okay, in the long run he will be successful. But however, on the short run, it seems like it will fail. Now, a person that recognizes that quality in another person, he will trust that person. In other words, just because you're a scientist and a great thinker, that doesn't mean you can be trusted. Today we know that there's doctors and there's psychologists. I mean, we know you got to double-check and triple-check these guys because a lot of them are not professional. You know what I mean? Just because they have a profession, that doesn't mean they're honest. You understand? And they do harm to people, and they would never admit that they did anything wrong. So therefore, just because they're a scientist doesn't mean they're honest. People don't trust them. But however, the person that has the trait of emes, that person, when he has that trait in him, then he will be trusted by others. People recognize that he can be trusted. Pasuk Hei says that B'tachal Hashem b'chol libecha v'al dinot v'al pishayim. B'tach means to trust, depend, rely upon God with all your heart, and on your mind you should not pishayim means lean. Also, it's the opposite. In other words, you shouldn't rely or depend or trust in your mind, but you should trust in God. Okay? Okay, the Rabbeinu Yonah says that b'chol libecha means v'leiv shalem, with a full heart. Okay, full heart. What does it mean, a full heart? Perfect truth means that there is no doubt about this. You have no doubt. Okay, that is the first half of the pasuk. That you don't have any doubt. Okay. Now the question is, What does it mean, the doubt? How do I have a doubt? How do I get doubt in the in my betachon? If I have knowledge and understanding that I should have betachon in God, wherein lies my doubt? Okay, that is the answer to that question. Is the second half of the pasuk. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that there are three explanations for the second half of the pasuk. You should not rely on your mind, okay? And he says there are three reasons which would cause doubt in your betacha. First one, he says that the mind represents trust in people. There's a certain security that a person has in people, okay? And sometimes there's a certain security that a person has in his ability. when he has the purity in himself, there are different components or different qualities what he might feel secure in. Certain people are secure in their body, that they work down their body and they're physically fit. You see, certain people feel secure in their karate because they feel they could protect themselves. And so they attach the security either to another person, like to a doctor. So he puts his life in the hands of the doctor, feels secure that the doctor will come through for him. Or he feels secure in his ability in karate, so he feels that he can protect himself, he feels secure. You understand? Or a different quality. Many people, the Rabbanion says many people are secure, their security comes from their mind. Okay? He says since the security comes from their mind, so they have that security in the mind. He says, so therefore the pasuk says security in the mind, which represents the idea that I have security in other things other than God. I don't have total security. There's a conflict. I don't really totally have security in God, but I have security in these things, these people or certain qualities in myself that I have security in. So since I have security in these things, so therefore that takes away from my security of God. Because if I had total security in God, I wouldn't have to have security in these things. The second type of betachon, the second type of trust, where it says that you trusted the betachon that you have in your mind, says the reason why you have betachon in your mind, because everything else comes from the mind. How do you make decisions? You make a decision that you're going to make money. You're going to make a decision that you want power. You're going to make a decision that you want fame. Whatever you want. How do you come to that conclusion? Everything that you decide must be decided through the mind. Whether you think it through thoroughly or whether you don't think it through thoroughly, well, the thing is the mind still makes the decision. Who do you rely on? Am I going to rely on this person? My mind makes the decision. I want to rely on this person. My mind makes the decision I should rely on something else. Even the subject of the tachan itself, what are we discussing? We're discussing trust in God. Now, how do I come to trust in God? I first must have the knowledge. I have to use my mind first. So therefore, since the source of everything I get is through my mind, so therefore, trust in my mind is the main important thing. So I have everything. So therefore, I have total trust in what my mind thinks. That is correct. And if I have any troubles, how I'm going to get out of it, I'm going to use my mind. How I operate in any given situation, I have to use my mind. So what am I going to rely on? What am I going to depend on? I'm going to rely and depend and trust on my mind. You see? That is contrary to relying on God and trusting God. You see? That is this. To hear the word trust in, before trust in your mind meant that it represents one case of an idea of trusting in objects. Here it is only the mind, because you trust in the mind because that's the source of every decision that you make. Even trusting in God, how you trust in God, how you get to that level of trust in God, you have to think it through. So since you have to think it through, the source of everything is your mind. So therefore, since it's the source of everything, therefore you trust in your mind. So the question is how do you trust in God if you don't trust in your mind, right? The answer is that the mind, when it makes decisions, is a practical tool. It's practical. You have, in other words, like I have to go to a doctor. It's practical. If I get sick, I have to go to a doctor. But there's a certain sense of security and trust that he will bring about the result. You say, it's not true. He doesn't bring about the result. My mind doesn't bring about the result. You see, my mind, the practically I must use the mind, just like if I'm going to walk. If I'm want to get someplace, I must use my feet, right? But you don't have, that's a practical thing. You don't trust in your feet. You understand? You don't have faith in my feet. I really have a real security about my feet. You know what I mean? The people don't think that way. But there's certain, but it's a practical thing. You know, to get someplace, you need your feet. So to get healthy, you got to go to a doctor. But the real security and the results are all in the hands of God. You see? But the thing is, the mind also is a practical thing of how to find God and how to find that idea of betachon, that trust in God. You see? So it's a means to that. But because it is the source of everything, every conclusion I come to, a lot of people, because of that, that since it's the source of everything, so they feel that since the source of everything, they place a tremendous amount of security in their very lives on that, on the mind, because it's the source of everything in their personal life. And the last point that he mentions is that when you see that, when you think things through, and then you're successful, you say, so everybody, people attach to success. And also, a proof, there's two things about success. One is people attach to the idea of success. Emotionally, they're attached because people want to be successful. So when they see something that helps them come to success, so they attach a certain security to that thing which brings them to success. Now, a person that learns to think with his mind and make decisions with his mind, he sees that through his mind, he has a tremendous amount of success. So therefore, since he has a tremendous amount of success, so emotionally, he places a tremendous amount of security of that thing which brings about the success, namely the mind. That's one way. Second way is that the truth is, how could you tell that it's better to guide your life by the mind than emotion? Because practically you see that that whenever you think out, if you look at all the things when you thought things out, you were more successful, a better possibility of success than there was than there was if you guided your life by emotion. So you see, experience constantly tells you that the mind, so you actually have a proof that that success in life will come about through the mind. So you see it from the result side, so the emotions attached to the result, and the mind tells you that that's your way to be successful. So therefore, from those two angles, you attach a tremendous amount of security in the mind, because you know that's the way you're going to be successful. You see? So therefore, because of that, so he says you got to be careful that you shouldn't be attached to that. Okay, you shouldn't be attached to the mind because it brings about success. I'm sorry, I don't mean attached. Not attached to the mind. I mean security in the mind. When you have a security, I'll give you an example. In other words, like this. Sometimes when a person has a plan and he works out the plan well, there is one area where the plan cannot take an effect. Cannot take an effect, certain things out of his control. Like this. Let's say, for instance, I have a strategy of war. And I plan the war and everything is worked out, and then the weather doesn't work out. You know what I mean? Like sometimes it's dependent on a certain weather that to be successful, so it's not in my hand. You see? Well, I start the war and the weather changes. You see? So the thing is that there are certain things which are out of my hand. Or for instance, if I'm at war and I do not have information about where the enemy is. And, you know, so I'm missing certain facets that I can't have. So therefore, you see, the mind practically can never be 100% successful. It's a better choice, the better choice than your emotions, but you can't be 100% successful because there are things which are out of your hands. So you see that you can't have, it's a practical tool, the mind. It's a practical tool towards success, you see, but there's no guarantee of success. There's no guarantee. So therefore, the only success that you could have is you have to rely on God for the result. That's all that's left. You must rely on God. And if it doesn't work out, then you have to say it's because of God. You see? Because the thing is that there is no guarantee in the in other words, it's the better tool of the two tools that you have. It's the better tool, but however, there's no guarantee, which shows that you can't have 100% security in the decision of the mind. So therefore, according to the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that the first half of the pasuk is telling you you should relate to God b'lev shalem, b'chol libecha, with a complete heart, and then he tells you the three possible ways that it could come about that will bring a doubt in your relationship to God, in your security, in your being totally secure and trust in God. Why? One is because you, without realizing that you trust in people or in certain qualities that you have. Two is since the mind is the source of all your decisions, so therefore that's the most that you must provide security in that, because you have to rely on that for everything. And two, since between the choice of emotions and the choice of the mind, which is the only two ways we can make decisions, so since most success comes about through the mind, so we place security on the mind because of that success. So he's saying that you must undo these three problems which cause you to be in doubt or to question or to operate or to act in a way which is contrary, or to think in a way which is contrary to being totally secure and rely on God. Alright, we're going to take a side point, and it's chapter 30 of Mishlei, verses 7, 8, and 9. Okay? It says like this, the three verses say like this. Two, I asked of you, don't refuse me before I die. Now, one of the commentaries here says before. He proves that you can use this term to mean that it will cause me to die. If you refuse me these two things, I will die. One is shav, nothingness, and devar kazav is a lie. Nothingness means a philosophy of nothingness, like idolatry. People worship idols. You know, they believe in idols, which is absolutely nothing. And then there are some people that it's a lie, they get involved in reality, but they come to incorrect conclusions. Okay? Then he says, distance me from poverty and wealth. Distance me from poverty and don't give me wealth. Okay? You should support me according to my needs. Okay? So exactly according to my needs. Why? So verse 9 says why? Because maybe I will be satisfied and I will forget. What does it mean I forget? I will say, who is God? Who is God meaning there is no God? Or perhaps I'll become poor and I will steal. And according to Rashi explains the next word, and I'll swear in the name of my God, I'll swear falsely to protect myself when they ask me to swear about stealing. So I'll swear that I never stole. And I'll swear falsely. Okay? Now, that's the... and Rashi also says, why if I'm wealthy? They're wealthy people that have accepted God. I mean, we have some of our greatest sages are wealthy. So he says that because he'll become haughty. So if wealth makes you haughty, so then you will deny God. Okay? So that's basically the fact. Okay. Again, verse 7 says, I have two requests of you. Okay? The question is, who is you that he's asking a request? Okay? And the commentaries say this is a prayer. He's speaking to God. Okay? And he's asking for help in this area, these two requests. And he says that these two things will, you shouldn't refuse me these two things, because these two things will cause me to die. Okay? So how it's going to cause you to die, we have to come back later after we analyze the two things. Problem is, it says four things, not two things. It says nothingness and falseness, that's two, right? And then don't give me that, and don't give me poverty, and don't give me wealth. These are four things he's asking for. Okay? The answer is that the two things is wealth and poverty. And what he is saying is that it's not how much, how great a mind you have, whether you're going to come to truth or not. It depends on how your personality. In other words, if certain things affect your view of life. There are people that are not great thinkers, but they can come to greater conclusions and ideas that other people won't come to. Or because their emotions won't. Simple that the that any that I mean you didn't have to have a great mind, but what allowed them to discover it is a freedom of thought that they could go into areas that other people can't go into because of their emotions. They can't think clearly because of their emotions. Now, so therefore, the nothingness and the falseness is a result of these two things, and so therefore we have to analyze the two things and how they represent all, you know what I mean, every, what aspects and how they affect you, what these two things are. I think there are three possibilities of interpreting this verse, okay? One type of mistake is that people are affected by the situation that they're in. Here, like it says, a wealthy person is affected by his wealth and says, look how smart I am, look how successful I am, I did it all on my own. Poor person who's in trouble, like, it uses the term here, stealing. There's two types of stealing. One type of stealing is, there's two types of stealing. One type of stealing is open, like a person comes with a gun and openly robs you. Another person that's a sneak thief. Torah holds that and according to the law in the Torah, you have to pay more for, if you're a sneak thief, if they catch you, you have to pay double. You stole something. But if you stole openly, then you only pay, you have to give back what you stole plus a fifth. Okay? As a fine, you have to put back a fifth. They didn't have the prison. They had fines. Okay? Now the question is, why is this type of crook paid double? The answer is because he's more afraid of people than he is of God. Okay? The same thing is swearing. He doesn't want to get caught, so he lies because he's afraid of getting caught, so he's more afraid of people. So therefore, this person, because of his situation, feels that God cannot help him. He has to work on his own, and he has to take from people, and he can't live the life of justice, or not he's going to fail. and he doesn't trust God, then when God says that you should live the life of justice, he denies this. So therefore, one is above God. He denies God because of his wealth. The other, and it's interesting, he says, and he swears in the name of my God. My God. Why he says my God? Why he says God? Because he does hope from some type of God. He hopes there's a God, but he feels insecure with that God, and he feels he has to do it on his own. You see? So therefore, there is a person that, based on the situation, he makes different types of decisions. One denies God totally. One doesn't has a God, but he doesn't trust him. A funny type of God, but he doesn't trust him. Okay? All right. So you see that the situation affects the way you think. Okay? And if it's the situation that decides who your God is, that's not the true God. True God must be objectively that you know God is the true God in every given situation, for better or for worse. That's true God. So if you come to a God, like for instance, there's some people, when they're poor, then they turn to God and they pray to God. You see, they turn to God. Now, that God is based on a certain feeling that there is a God that will help me. But it's not the objective God, because the objective God would, whether you're poor or you're rich, I mean, it doesn't make a difference. You see? So when you make a... So when you make a decision based on the situation, so that is not the real God. That is just it's just the situation that's making you come to that conclusion. So that is one type of thing that he could be talking about here, that there are different situations in life. For instance, also, like if a person is successful, how he feels about himself. Person is a failure, how he feels about himself. It's a situation which decides who you are. You're successful, or things around you, how people think of you. If people think of you special, so then you feel good. If people think of you not, so then not. So there's a different situation. There's a different situation that can, each situation affects who you are, and affects how you make decisions and how you relate to God. So that would be a, in other words, you can't come to any correct conclusion. You can't come to any real idea. You're just governed by your situation from day to day or from week to week or whatever happens during your lifetime. Okay? So therefore he says, he has God, I can't come to any reality if I'm guided by these two, by situations. He says, please protect me from this. And this could really destroy you, because since you make, let's say if you have a false image of yourself, a bad image of yourself, so then you'll make decisions based on the bad image. If you have a good image, a image out of reality, beyond reality, so then you'll make decisions based like that, so you'll be destroyed. So either way, you're harmed. That's one way of looking at the pasuk. The question is, what does it mean to die? Does it mean literally to die? Well, die is the absolute end that you causes you to die. You understand? That's the ultimate, okay, where you do acts which will shorten your life. I mean, definitely people make decisions that will shorten their life. But also that during their life they will get consequences. Even if they don't die, they will get consequences and they will definitely be unhappy. That's what it means, die. Die means the ultimate consequence for living an incorrect life. But it does mean literally that you can die. That is correct. It is not talking about a spiritual death, it's talking about a physical death. But it could also mean spiritual, depending on the subject. But usually when it talks about death, it means physically to die. That in Mishlei. Okay, it means that when you, the consequences, from what I could see, I'm not saying every time, no. I'm not saying, and I'm not saying you can't sometimes interpret it the other way, but usually it means the consequence, the ultimate consequence is you're going to cause yourself to die earlier than usual, which means that it's the result of an incorrect decision or an incorrect view of life, somehow you made an incorrect decision. And therefore, you cause yourself to get consequences and the ultimate consequence and the final consequence is that it causes you to die before your time. The question is, does this verse, or in general in Proverbs, in Mishlei, does it apply to the individual or does it also apply to groups? The answer is that a person is a small group and a group is a big person. But a society is made up of people, and therefore what the nature of the society is must be something in the nature of a human. They can't have a personality which is not human. You see? So therefore, when sometimes you could define the society, how the whole society operates, and look at them as a unit of, but it must be, since it's a unit of people, or a species of people, so therefore, how you define it must be according to human nature, that they're all guided by the same personality. Also, an individual has his own personality, so you could sometimes look at it as the individual, and sometimes you could apply it to a society also. Second possibility that was mentioned by everybody here, and that is, it's not that you're guided by outside situations, you're not affected by outside situations, but your personality is an extreme, and the wealth represents haughtiness, right? Where the wealth affected your personality represents that you're haughty, and you're an extreme that way. And poverty represents that you're extreme, look at yourself in a very bad light. That it's not from the outside factors, but it's from within you that you feel that way about yourself. It's within your personality, and these extremes will definitely affect the way you think and make decisions in life, and therefore you'll constantly make bad decisions in life. So it represents an extreme view within your personality of how you look at life. So that is the second possibility, that he's saying that because of an extreme part of a personality, it'll affect my relationship to reality and it'll affect my view of God. When I mean by extreme, I think this is when it says wealth or poverty, that you have an extreme about haughtiness or about the bad self-image. I think King Solomon is only using this as an example. I mean, some people are stingy, some people are greedy, some people are angry, some people never get angry. Some people are hooked on eating, I mean, smoking. I mean, they're extremes that people are addicted to or that they can't stop. That's an extreme. Any extreme will affect the way you think, and any time that it affects the way you think, it could affect either your decision-making or in your relationship to God. You never know when it's going to affect how you look at something, when you are studying, when you're thinking about something, that it's going to affect you. Doesn't mean these two, this is only an example of this principle of extreme. Yeah. Everybody mentioned... The third possibility is that when a human being starts out in life, he has a relative value system. Okay. A relative value system means that where did you get your value system? The first value system that you get from your parents, from educators, right? Now, you're just raised in a certain value system. Your society, without them telling you, you're raised with a certain value system. It's a relative value system. It's relative to what people tell you, and it's relative to others. You measure yourself, like, for instance, competition. You evaluate yourself in relationship to others. Okay? Whether you're going to be successful is if you have a good role model in relationship to that role model or a bad role model. Okay? Because it's in relationship to people. It's not an objective view. An objective view means that you think it through and reality dictates it to prove that this is the best way to live. Okay? So therefore, once you prove it, so then it's an objective. And it has nothing to do with others, and you only guide your life by this system, and you evaluate yourself only in line, if you're in line with this system or not. Okay? So, but most people, I mean, you have to be, when you start out in life, you must start out with a relative value system. But since it's a relative value system, like let's say competition, so that could affect how you think about life. I mean, if you look at life by virtue of how people, other people, you measure yourself in terms of others, so then what your value system is going to be in terms of others, and that will affect the way you think. So that will definitely you'll come to incorrect conclusions. And you'll have false ideas about God and about life in general. Okay? So it is possible that what he is talking about, any one of these three things. Okay, clarification on the third possibility. When a person comes into life, basically he learns his value system from the people that raised him, and he picks it up from the society, and he'll also get it from school. Okay. The question is where do we see it in the verse of the rich man and poor man? Right now, since Rashi says that the rich man represents haughtiness, so then the poor man must represent the opposite of haughtiness. Haughtiness means that I look down on people. I am special, and I look down on people. A haughty person must find somebody to look down on. Well, he must create in his own mind somebody that he is looking down on, because that's the way he satisfies his haughtiness. While a person with a bad self-image always looks up to the person that he that is greater than him, that I can't reach, and so therefore I have a bad self-image. So therefore, again, it's from there that I see the that there is the value system is the relative value system. That's where it comes from the verse. The question is that I used haughtiness for the, I used Rashi for that idea of haughtiness. I used it for the second possibility, namely extremes, and I used it for the third possibility, namely the relative value system. The thing is that is true, but I'm using haughtiness, one is to represent an extreme, okay? In other words, the middle road is where I realize that I'm something, I'm not a nothing, while the other side, I could take criticism and I could say that I made a mistake. That's the middle road. Haughtiness is an extreme. Bad self-image is an extreme. That's, you could look at it one way. You could also look at it that haughtiness, the idea of haughtiness is that I must have somebody to look down upon, which means that it is a part of my relative value system, you see? And also, and if I have a bad self-image, again, it must be in relationship to somebody else, so I could look at it from a, I could look at the same quality from two different angles. Question is, which angle is King Solomon talking about? Okay, that's very well explained, James. That the that a person in the last possibility, he's caught only, his view of life is only in relationship to others. And that will affect his own life, and it'll also affect his relationship to God and the idea of reality. It'll definitely affect him. It could be there is a fourth possibility, and that is that all three of these situations will be in the same person, okay? Because of this, when anybody starts out in life, they must have a relative value system, because the only thing they know, the value system, is from the like I said, from the person that raises them or their society, okay? From other people. Now, when you have somebody educating you, then you're going to pick up from them sometimes in the education and sometimes from their personality. You pick up from the personality, even from what they don't say, you pick up things, and you pick up extremes. You pick up extremes, OK? Okay, like for instance, Jacob raised Yosef slightly different than the other children, and because of that, Yosef had an ego problem. He was a little self-centered and had a certain ego problem. Okay? So therefore you see that that you pick up the extremes, where you pick up the extremes from is where you learn from others. Okay? Now, since you are in relative value system in relationship to others, and you're always looking outside of yourself to evaluate, it extends to situations where the situations affect you. You see, in other words, if you're an objective thinker, so then everything comes from within you. And you analyze, you look at the facts, and from the facts you make decisions, and you get the ideas from the facts. Okay, you abstract from the facts. But if it comes from how you relate to people and everything outside you affects you, so then the situation around you will also affect you, and therefore the what situation you're in will dictate to you how people are looking at you also. So therefore the situation is part and parcel of the whole thing, so it could be all three that you could look at separately are interrelated, and you cannot have one without the other, and it all stems from the way you are raised, that since you are raised and your value system is based on people, so you must start out with a relative value system. That will lead to extremes, and it will also lead that you'll make decisions based on the situation that you're in. In other words, sometimes there are many ways of analyzing something wrong with your soul. You say, if there's something wrong, you could look at it in different angles, and you can investigate it from the different angles, because the odds are if there is one there, then all three angles will be there, and it will affect the way you think, and it will affect, and it will not allow you to all, I mean, you could look at, you can't get above your emotions and think correctly. I'm not saying you can't think at all, and not there would be no way out there to cure yourself. So you have to have the ability to get above this to be able to cure yourself. But however, there, when you investigate it, however, the thing is that it will still affect the way you think. It will affect you in a lot of areas, the way you think. So therefore, but the thing is, you have different ways of investigating the incorrect view of life. It can't help from looking at it from the different angles. Now, if you have this relative value system and you have all these problems, then it will affect you in the way you think. And this will affect one of two types of mistakes. One is either you'll think of nothingness, you'll come to conclusions or you'll think about things that absolutely do not exist in reality. This extreme, or this relative value system, or the situation, the way you affect it, could affect that you could accept something that does not exist, like religion. That people in certain situations accepted religion, for whatever reason, many different, they accepted religion based on the rule that doesn't exist. It's nothing. Then these emotions could affect the way you that you could be a thinker, and it could affect the way you think, and it will make you make incorrect decisions, or your basic premise, you accept the basic premise that is really contradictory, and because of emotions you won't recognize the contradiction because you don't want to, and then you build up a whole system based on this false premise, and this will come based on this emotional system. The Rabbeinu Yonah holds that Pasuk Vav is a continuation of the last Pasuk, and that you should trust in God. Okay? You should give total trust in God. Okay? Now, when you give total trust in God, there is a slight trick of the mind. It's not only here, trust in God, but it's in a lot of ideas. There's a trick of the mind. And the trick of the mind, it works like this. Universally, you accept a certain proposition, certain statement, certain truth. It's clear to the mind exactly what it is. And then when you carry it out in your everyday life, you don't think of that. You relate to it the way you, in other words, like in everyday life, like when you're crossing the street, you feel security in getting across the street is by looking two ways. It is a practical thing to look two ways. It is practical. You must live in the practical. But however, with the result is not in your hands. That's what we said, the toughness, right? You never, very rarely does a person think when he's crossing the street that his real security is in God. But he feels his security is in the practical which he carried out. Okay, the question is, since you have to use the laws of nature, in exactly what area are you relying on, are you relying on God? Okay, exactly in what area are you relying on God? Okay? The thing is that the first thing before, there's a certain conflict that a person doesn't realize that he has. He has a certain conflict. There's one conflict that he feels he relies on God, like in the universal. But however, there's another feeling that he still feels that he makes decisions and his decisions are the cause of things being carried out. So before you can have bitachon, you must remove the security that you, what you make a decision is really you. And that's the pasuk. It says, Sume Rava Seto. First, you have to undo the harm, the incorrect view, right, before you can get the correct view. So the question is, what is the incorrect view and why is it incorrect? Right. The thing is that I make a decision to cross the street, right? And I look both ways and I said, see, look, I did the correct thing, therefore I got across. Not true. Because your decision is only made in the situation that you are in. But there are factors in that situation that you might not be aware of. There might be a guy speeding around the corner where you can't see and he's going 60, 70 miles an hour. That'll be out of your control. There might be a drunk driver that might come back, might be driving by, and he drives on the sidewalk. There are, when you make your decision, it can only be in the framework that you have. There are many decisions, there are many parts of that decision that you can't make a correct decision because it's out of your framework. You just don't have the information. Okay? There are causes that are not in your hands. So you'll ask me, but I still have security in the framework that I did make the decision. It's true, I don't have the security outside that framework, but I do, insofar as my framework, I should have security totally in my decision, because I look both ways, I should have security in that. The answer is that a person, let's say for instance a person has a disease. It's possible that he's not aware of it yet, but it's happening. He's not aware of it. In other words, there might be something within you that could stop you even from getting across the street, even from standing up. There is some, there is even in within you, even with every single, in any given situation, there are thousands of factors which you're not aware of. There's something wrong within you. Anything could happen. I'm saying that there isn't anything, there's very little that is outside the framework of this decision. That is not outside. I mean, there's so many outside factors that you cannot know. The decision could never be 100% secure. At this point, I'm not saying how to recognize God. I'm saying the first step, which is not here in the Rabbeinu Yonah. I understand it's not the Rabbeinu Yonah. But however, to get to the Rabbeinu Yonah where you have the positive of where we recognize that you that your real security is in God, I'm saying the first step towards that is to remove your security in what you thought was secure in the physical world. There is no real security in the physical world. Once you recognize that there is no real security in the physical world, then you see clearly the universal, that that God can protect you and interfere in every area of the physical, so then you will turn to God to recognize and start recognizing God in the particulars, that you can't turn to God through tefillah or by developing and reaching higher levels, then you recognize that it is only God that could take you out of this insecurity. That the ultimate success is God, who has control over all these outside factors, which you don't. So therefore, through tefillah and through reaching higher levels, so that God will have a personal relationship, and that'll be your true protection. This trick of the mind, the Rabbeinu Yonah elaborates on, and he says there's some people that recognize God when they're going on a big trip. You know what I mean? Going in an airplane, they're going on some trip driving for hours. But if they just go on, across the street, they don't see that. They don't see that. They only see it in big things, but in everyday life they don't notice it. Same type of thing. The essay says, in this case, in other words, when you're going into a different situation, insecurity is awakened, so you turn to God because of your insecurity. But in everyday life, you just do these things every day. You don't feel insecure about it, since by virtue of the fact that you do it every day. So since you don't feel insecure, so you don't turn to God. So that's why you don't turn to God. Or sometimes if there's a big loss, like you go into a big business deal and the loss is very great, so then again the insecurity is awakened, so you turn to God. But if it's only a quarter or a dollar, so it doesn't bother you. So there's no insecurity awakened, so therefore you don't recognize God in that situation. So a person must, real betachon in Hashem is a recognition of the insecurity of the physical world in general, that there is no security in the laws of nature. There is absolutely no security. Once you recognize that, then if you have the general principle of betachon, that is real to you, the general principle, then that will fill the void, and you'll see how trust in God works in the whole system, how God relates to you, and how and where you can trust in God. What if, the question is like this, what if you recognize the insecurity of the physical world and you turn totally to God for all, in other words, you do everything in the laws of nature that is necessary to be successful from the framework that you're operating in, okay? And then you turn to God for results, that God should make sure that there is no outside factors that will affect me, and God should protect me there. In other words, I do what I can, and then I rely on God, and then I fail. Okay? The answer is, in that situation, I must accept that it's God's will, for whatever reason, that this should happen. I might not know the reason. There might be different factors why this has to happen. Sometimes it might be because of me. For whatever reason, God chose, like you see Rabbi Akiva, I mean, he didn't deserve to die. Whatever the system, how the system works, however God relates to us, there's sometimes reasons where God will not answer your tefillah. Okay? Whatever reason. Then you must accept God's will. That's it. You must accept God's will, because God knows that this is happening, and he allowed it to happen, or he caused it to happen, one of the two. So therefore, you must accept God's will, and that once you've done all this and it doesn't work out, then you must accept that it's God's will. Right. If there, in other words, like this, when something bad happens, and you've done everything you can. In other words, the formula is you must do everything in the laws of nature that you can. That was the story of Yaakov, Rashi's explanation of Yaakov. He did everything in the laws of nature, and then he prayed to God that God should make sure that that everything he did should be successful. Okay, that's the formula. With the story with Esav, right, with Yaakov and Esav, right. When he met Esav and he sent the presents and then he prepared for war, then he prayed to God that he should be successful, okay? All right. Now, the thing is, if it doesn't work out, then there could be different reasons. You have to investigate. Again, that is knowledge of Torah. It could be something personal, okay? First, you have to check out that I do everything within the laws of nature. Maybe there's one more step that I could take. Maybe I did something wrong and God is punishing me, so I have to check my mindset, my actions. Or maybe I have to do tshuva, you see? Or maybe it's totally out of my hands, which has nothing to do with me, like the story of Rabbi Akiva. That he didn't do anything wrong, and that's the way it was, and it happened. Well, whatever the factors are over there, you see? So the thing is, there could be many reasons why it goes wrong. You must have, but at some point you have to accept. But there's nothing more you could do. There's either tshuva or acceptance of God. There's nothing more. Rabbeinu Yonah says that at a certain point you should recognize that the greatest benefit of doing this is the fact that you operate this way based on this betachon, and that you guide it this way, and it has nothing, and the benefit that of the success in the physical world, that is not the essence. That's when you start out, you want to be successful in the physical world, so then you turn to betachon to be successful in the physical world. But then ultimately you realize that the ultimate success, the real benefit, is that you live and guide your life by through this, that you turn to God and rely on God for all your needs. That in itself is better than the practical. Right, the question is, how could you compare the two? One is a physical result, and one is a spiritual thing. It's two separate things. Why can't you have both? You need both, right? Why does Rabbeinu Yonah say that one is greater than the other? First of all, he doesn't say that the other one is of no importance. He says that this is greater. This is much greater, that the benefit is much greater in the betachon itself than in the success that you get from the betachon. Okay? But he's not saying the success is absolutely nothing. You need it, whatever it is. You want it. You should have it. You can get it. But he's saying in relationship, one is much greater than the other. One answer is that if you have this quality, then you could be successful in many cases, not in just one case. So then the thing is the essence is still the success. You see, you're still saying the essence is the success, it's just the quantity of the success. That's not what the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. He's saying this quality that you have, betachon in itself, is the greater benefit. And that's what Ilan is saying, is that Ilan said that the benefit is in the perfection of the soul, when you recognize the change in your personality and your development and who you are. That is a greater thing. You recognize that as a greater success, a greater benefit, and that anything you could get in life is the change in your personal nature and who you are. That there is no greater benefit than that. It starts out that you use betachon as a means to get something in the physical, but it winds up that the success in the physical is a means towards the real success, which is the whole change in your personality and your nature and in who you are, how you live your life and how you make your decisions and how you're motivated, all these changes, that is the real benefit. You recognize that as the real benefit, and everything else is just the means to that.